Central offices believe that the reps will have specific requests, but that there's also a reasonably high chance of a negative reaction. If so, feel free to engage any anomalous entities, but under no circumstances engage any demons outside of a formal challenge."
She rattled off the information quickly, and Rick felt as though he was lacking essential background information, just like he still didn't know why everyone was dressed up. He'd always thought that avoiding demons was the responsible thing to do, yet apparently it left him behind the curve here. Combined with the verbal beating he'd received, it had him in quite a bad mood when the demons arrived. They showed up in a burning ring of fire, and Rick just stared. There were several of them, including a succubus in a business suit and several guards that appeared to be riding human bodies. Most of his attention was drawn by the leader, who could not have looked more stereotypically demonic if he'd tried. And maybe he had tried. With his red skin and horns, he looked like he was ready to go down to Georgia to challenge a young fighter to a duel. Rick thought back to the succubus going by the title of Lilith at the demonic bond office and her implications about how demons conformed to human expectations. She had been subtle, though, changing herself to match him. This demon lord look in the blood-red suit was over the top. Rick didn't think that anyone with a position of authority in a demonic organization would be an idiot, so was it a statement?
"Greetings, Lord Beelzebub."
The CSLA official stepped forward and nodded to him, for once seeming utterly present in the moment. That name, though, Rick had to assume it was another title.
"We're happy to help you with whatever concerns you may wish to bring."
"I rather doubt that."
Beelzebub, if that was his name, toyed with one of his cufflinks irritably.
"Your entire purpose here has always been to manipulate local aura such that you choke off our access."
"Lord Beelzebub, I assure you, that is not true. Haven't we maintained all agreements?"
"You have, but with the data you're gathering, you could choose to do otherwise, and that leverage has not gone unnoticed."
"Ah, I see."
Strangely, the woman smiled and nodded.
"We apologize if our actions have seemed aggressive. We assure you, however, we intended no such insult. Perhaps we could begin with a show of good faith, perhaps simple negotiations to ensure there is not an anomalous rupture."
For the first time, the head demon seemed slightly pleased.
"Yes, that would be a good start. Such a rupture would benefit no one."
Tension that Rick hadn't realized had slowly filled the air suddenly dissipated. It had been too subtle for him to identify, but both the CSLA representative and the demon leader had been slowly marshaling resources for a fight. Now that they stood down, everyone could breathe easier.
"That is only a good first step," Lord Beelzebub said. "The truth is, the implicit threat of your actions cannot be ignored, even if it is truly unintentional."
"What could we do to alleviate those concerns?"
"You could cease this excessive surveying."
The woman gave a small, lifeless smile.
"I'm afraid that's entirely impossible, Lord Beelzebub. Would you be satisfied with the inclusion of fully bonded agents along with our surveyors?"
"If the numbers are equal to your own agents. Otherwise, there is little purpose."
"That would be a rather large number, and it would make some people on this side feel uncomfortable. Surely we can reach a compromise."
"Perhaps so."
Lord Beelzebub smiled, baring deadly-looking teeth, and folded his arms over his chest.
"This may be a good time to follow the old codes. Let us decide the number of agents that will be allowed to join you by the ancient rites of formal duels. I see that you have already brought champions."
"A fine suggestion. We have brought 10 warriors, so should we begin 10 duels?"
"That would advantage your side, and you know it. No, perhaps 3 duels would be a more fitting number."
Rick's eyes bounced back and forth as he followed the negotiations. Some of the exact details escaped him, but now he understood the purpose of the meeting and why everyone was well-dressed. He didn't know a lot about demonic duels, but he did remember that they were combat combined with argument, conflicts that decided matters between two opposed sides. They continued to debate the appropriate format for the duel, leaving Rick to wonder whether or not he'd be called to fight. Likely not, given that he was the weakest person present. Yet, as he waited, he found himself looking past the demons. There was a rift in the sky, and the air was roiling. The others were beginning to realize as well, some with dismay and others with puzzlement. Jack lit up his aura tattoos and shot a feral grin in Rick's direction, as if promising to target him instead of the mutual threat. Yet Rick found his attention captured instead by Damien. The young man had gotten to his feet and was putting his sunglasses away with a very strange look of concentration. He didn't seem surprised.
A rupture.
Lord Beelzebub turned toward it with a scowl, as if personally affronted.
Which one of your incompetent underlings caused this?
These are our best,
the woman objected, unconcerned by the fact that strange, half-visible creatures were now folding into existence.
If anything has led to this rupture, it is no doubt your excessive display of force in our world.
Though it seemed that the two of them would continue to argue, there was no time to think about it, with flickering creatures beginning to crawl over the asphalt. The main question was if either side would just crush the problem with overwhelming power, yet they didn't seem to be doing so. Perhaps it had something to do with the sensitivity they were arguing about. All the other fighters, even Panjo, seemed to be preparing to fight, so that was apparently the thing to do. Most of them formed a circle around the two leaders, and the bonded humans did the same on their side, so apparently this was a defensive game. He could do that. When the first of the flickering creatures approached the line, he didn't hesitate to kick it, hard enough that it exploded out of existence. Last time, they had been a bit of a challenge, but since then he'd grown stronger and had gained some experience fighting smaller creatures. Plus, the others naturally formed a rough line, so he had people guarding his flanks. Given that, Rick felt comfortable looking beyond to the source of the rupture. This one looked a bit different, mist escaping into the air. He didn't know what that meant, but judging from the reactions of both leaders, it wasn't good. Presumably, they were trying to do something, but meanwhile, there were more entities emerging, and they seemed to be getting bigger much faster than before. Rick ducked underneath a leaping creature and made sure to elbow it in the stomach as it flew overhead, destroying it before it could get behind the others. Someone else wasn't so careful, and suddenly there was a larger creature on his flank, almost gorilla-sized. He lashed out with a blow, and the creature rocked back, but only a little. It raised four different limbs that were oddly thin, whipping through the air, their half-invisible state making it difficult to identify them. That was a terrible opponent for his skills, but he readied himself to try to defend against all four limbs and take the thing down before they could get mobbed. Without warning, a wall of energy rushed past, evaporating the creature and nearly taking off his arm. Rick shot a glance at the woman with the baseball cap, who waved her hand strangely.
Sorry, but look out!
Her eyes were actually focused past him, and Rick turned, only to see Jack throwing a fist in his direction. Though Rick managed to raise both forearms to block, and this time his defensive core wasn't torn apart, the blow sent him flying back through the air. A bit shaken by the force of it, he couldn't catch himself, just skipping painfully across the asphalt before crashing to a halt. He immediately pushed himself up, scrambling away from a massive dog-like shape that snapped at him with semi-visible jaws. Somehow he managed to grab it around the middle and hurl it into the nearest creature, desperately trying to buy time to get his bearings. The blow had knocked him far away from all the other fighters, which had probably been the plan. It seemed the leaders were focused on the rupture itself and unlikely to give any aid. Strangely, the only person anywhere near him was Damien, who seemed to be moving in his direction, perhaps to help. That was kind of him, but he was probably going to be too late. A shift in the air was all the warning Rick got that something massive had manifested behind him. He spun as he turned around, barely avoiding a swiping hand. It was difficult to see the features of the thing. It was just taller than him and roughly humanoid. When he tried to leap away with a bunion step, somehow the creature came along with him. Rick desperately threw himself away again, which put him dangerously close to the rupture. The creature followed again, and he didn't think, just struck with his best shot. Rick reached inside and drew out his sister's void flame, slamming it into the creature's chest. For an instant, he was afraid it would do nothing. Then the creature exploded. The shower of fragments passed over him harmlessly, but knocked back all the nearby entities. Given some space, he hastily moved to get back to the others, surprised to find that Damien was still near.
Get out!
Damien yelled, no trace of joking on his face now. It's going to blow soon! If he'd acted in that moment, Rick might have escaped. But instead, he looked in the direction the other man watched. The mist was flowing more rapidly from the rupture now, and in that moment, the rupture abruptly exploded open, rushing past him and completely obscuring his view of the world. When Rick came to, he was standing on an empty, dark plain. Except he wasn't just standing, more floating. Mists like those from the rupture floated all around him, sliding over and through his body. He felt completely disoriented as he stared at the pale white sky overhead. The only thing that looked real and normal to him was Damien, who was on his knees nearby. No one else was visible.
What the hell was that?
His voice was distorted, as if speaking through water. Damien got to his feet with a grimace.
We've been knocked to the demon realm.
We've what? Can we live here long enough for them to rescue us?
Oh, we can survive.
Damien cracked his neck in both directions.
But there's not going to be any rescue coming. Not soon.
Chapter 30. On the Other Side.
Wait, what?
Rick ignored all the insanity around him and grabbed the other young man by the front of his suit.
Why the hell wouldn't they come rescue us? Because we accidentally solved their problem.
Damien brushed his hands away with a smooth gesture.
They were trying to close the rupture without anything passing into the demon realm. But if you don't care about that, one of the ways to solve that problem is to just chuck someone in. If they brought us out, they'd just tear the rupture open again.
But I refuse to believe they'd leave us here. When do they come?
When they can find a less damaging path in. I'm not sure how long that will be.
Rick turned away from the other man, his mind reeling. Now that he understood where he was, he found himself looking at the landscape entirely differently. It looked almost like a normal plain, not so different than the wilderness outside Branton, but the ground was pitch black, and the sky a pale white without any sun. Everything seemed just a bit unnatural, as if he didn't belong. Which he didn't. Though he didn't know exactly how it worked, it was as unnatural for humans to be in the demon realm as for demons to be in the human one. When Rick tried to brace himself on the ground, his feet actually sank into it, as if the surface didn't exist. He realized with a start that though the mist did curl around him slightly, it literally passed through him. As if he was a ghost, except it was the world around that seemed insubstantial. Except for Damien. Rick turned on the other man.
How did this happen? It wasn't you, if that's what you were afraid of. You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Damien closed his eyes and flattened his palms together in front of him.
You'd better get some aura together fast, or you're going to be in trouble.
What? Rick tried to summon his aura defensively, but everything felt wrong. His lucrima soul still burned within him, yet trying to use it was like trying to move a limb that had fallen asleep.
It's not coming right. And just what's going to happen? Jesus, you really don't know anything.
Damien fixed him with a flat gaze.
Okay, don't look around, just focus on yourself. You don't need any special technique. It's just going to be harder than usual, like channeling the energy through your toes instead of your core.
The advice to not look around immediately had the opposite effect. When Rick looked, he realized that there were eyes watching them in the surrounding area. Most low to the ground, many with three eyes, but others with 4 or 12 or even more. Demons shifted toward them, not genteel negotiators like Beelzebub, but twisted spiders, reptiles, and stranger beasts. Swallowing his fear, Rick focused on his aura. Something did seem to stir, just not enough. He risked another look and saw that the demons were getting closer. They flinched away from the red glow around Damien's body, which only meant that more were coming for him. Rick closed his eyes and focused desperately. Just when he felt something brush against his leg, he finally managed to generate some aura. Blue light burst into existence around him, and all the nearby demons flinched back. They began to rustle around the two of them, not exactly predatory, just disgruntled.
Don't hit them, by the way.
Damien had been thrown off for a while, but now seemed completely calm. He reached into his pocket and put on his mirror sunglasses again.
These things are barely conscious and don't know what they're doing. It's just a matter of shooing away flies.
With that, he took a deep breath and his aura expanded explosively. Such a general use of an aura didn't harm Rick, it was barely even pressure, yet the demons all began to flee. Soon they had all skittered to a safe distance. After a while longer, they started to disperse, as if looking for easier prey. Now that the danger had passed, Rick cursed his awful luck. His hard work had put him into the top 10 at the absolutely worst time. A normal negotiation had somehow gone bad, Jack's vendetta had turned against him nastily, and the fight had pushed him in the wrong direction. The only bit of good luck was that Damien had been taken along with him and could explain what to do.
"Here's what we're going to do," Damien said. "They will definitely come to help us, hopefully the demonic negotiators and eventually the CSLA. In that time, we need to stay safe and avoid making anything worse. There's really nothing we can do. I'm going to search for any quicker way back, since I hate being gone as much as you do, but since you're inexperienced here, you should stay put. The good news is that our bodies don't properly exist here. You don't need to eat or drink anything. It's actually a bit like how demons exist in our world."
"How does that make any sense?"
"It's complex theory, okay? Our world is built mostly on matter, while the demon realm is built mostly on energy. Or in Lucrum terms, our world is ether and theirs is aura."
Damien spoke without thinking about it, already beginning to scout around them.
"In our world, they grant us aura, but in return they want matter. So that's why our bodies are a prime target here, because matter like ours is so rare."
Rick nodded in vague understanding. He might not be an expert in this, but he knew enough of Lucrum theory for that explanation to make sense. It was bizarre to think that the roles were reversed here, yet that was easier than thinking he was in an insane realm filled with monsters. No, this was just the demon realm, which was a normal part of reality. He was surprised at how little it looked like popular visions of hell, despite Lord Beelzebub's diabolical appearance. Just another show put on to meet human expectations, he supposed. That thought stuck in his mind, combined with an earlier thought, and twisted into a realization.
"Looks like you have your aura steady," Damien said. "So I think I'm going to scout quickly. You stay here while I find a safe place."
"You planned to come here, didn't you?" Rick's accusation made Damien whirl around to face him, which was answer enough. A split second later, the other man scoffed and gave him an incredulous look, but it was too late.
"Okay, I think moving between realms must have messed with you a lot harder than it seemed."
Everyone else seemed to think a rupture wouldn't happen, and they were shocked when it did, but not you. It might sound like an insane theory, but Rick remembered Damien's expression quite clearly. As he spoke about it, he became increasingly confident. "I don't know why, but you wanted to come here."
"Think about what you're saying for one goddamn second. You think I walked into a negotiation with a Beelzebub and a GLA rep with a fucking 500,000 generation rate, then just wrecked what they wanted? Even if I could do something like that, it'd be suicide."
"No, I think it makes sense. From the very beginning, you've been presenting yourself as showy and ridiculous, hiding in plain sight. But you were waiting for this moment. Hell, maybe you set it up." All the false laughter fell away from Damien's expression, and in that instant, his mirrored sunglasses looked ominous instead of ridiculous. A split second later, he had crossed the distance between them, his hand closing around Rick's neck. Yet he just felt a strange weight, not his throat being crushed. Rick lightly kicked off the other man and drifted back through the mists before gliding to the ground. "Nice threat, but you said before that our bodies don't exist normally here. You might want to kill me, but you can't." Damien glared at him, slowly folding his arms. Eventually, he shook his head.
"You're wrong about that. We might not be able to brawl here, but you're far from invincible. But it doesn't matter. I'm not going to threaten you. Not if we can talk this out."
"So I was right. You wanted this for some reason."
"Oh, I'm not going to talk about my reasons."
Damien took off his sunglasses and put them away. For the first time, The movement didn't look like he was trying too hard to be badass. No, his gaze was deadly serious.
I can tell you this. I didn't intend for you to come along, and I have absolutely nothing to gain by you not making it back. Actually, I have a lot to lose, since that would bring more suspicion on me.
Rick nodded, glad that he wouldn't be fighting in this strange place. His mind was now overflowing with questions, and he struggled to pick out the important ones. So, whatever your Grandmaster scheme is, it doesn't involve murdering me.
Would I tell you if it did?
Damien grinned with a bit of his old pretension, but the expression slipped away almost immediately.
No, what I wanted was to do my work here without interruption or surveillance. The nature of the rupture took care of that. You're a complication, but not an impossible one. I'll teach you how to take care of yourself here, then we can coordinate the rest.
If you stick to that, you have a deal.
Though Rick wanted to figure out exactly what the hell Damien was trying to do, he recognized that he didn't have a lot of leverage. He eyed the other man, then stuck out his hand.
If you can tell me that your plan isn't terrorism or something, we can work together.
Nah, not like that. Just business.
Damien smirked and shook his hand firmly.
Now, first, what you need to understand is that here you're an asset, just like the demons are in our world. You don't need to eat, but you'll be feeding off your lucrum. It runs out, you starve, and don't expect to find much you can use here, because the demon realm has even greater lucrum inequality than ours. So you need to consider your portfolio and use it very carefully.
Nodding, Rick reached for his phone on instinct. It was still in his pocket, but the screen was completely blank, as if it had no power. Maybe electricity just didn't exist here. Instead, he just did his best to remember his portfolio. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier, 14th. Ether score, 340-ish. Lucrum generation, 50,000. Effective rate, 48,500. Current lucrum, full. Rick Hunter's Lucrima portfolio. Foundation, 3,100, level 4. Offensive lucor, 8,400, level 5. Defensive lucor, almost 20,000, level 8. Bunyan step, 8,600, level 5. Gram stake, 9,000, level 2. Lucrum mass, 1,300, NA. Aura leech, negative 1,800, stage 1. Gross lucrum, 50,000. Net lucrum, 48,500. He was surprisingly unsettled not to have exact numbers. He really depended on the app to keep track of everything for him. Would the remaining aura leech drain him here? Was his gram stake developed enough to support him? There was no way to do any precise calculations, leaving him adrift. However much he really had, that was it. Before that day, he'd been quite proud of his portfolio, but one experience after another had raised doubts. Now, it was all he had keeping him alive.
Chapter 31. Demonic Branton.
Exploring the demon realm was not something Rick had ever expected to be doing. Yet, there he was. His instincts were to hike the way he did in the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. Yet, instead, it was easier to just push off the insubstantial ground and drift. They were almost like spirits here, and increasingly so, as Damien taught him a more elaborate aura technique.
The demon realm might look superficially like our world, but don't be mistaken.
Damien waved a hand below, where demons occasionally crawled across the landscape.
One of the largest differences is that most of the lesser ones aren't really using their eyes, just their aura senses, so we can make ourselves practically invisible to all but the stronger ones.
By matching the ambient aura of everything around here?
Rick tried to shift his, but wasn't sure what he was aiming for.
I get the concept, but this place doesn't feel like aura to me.
Because a world of aura is different than the isolated pieces you're used to. I'm already matching it, so focus on me instead and copy.
Though Damien put little more effort into teaching him, it wasn't so complex that Rick couldn't mimic what he was doing. When they next drifted to the ground, he was surprised to see that they were completely ignored by nearby demons. That was a useful skill. Of course, there was a problem.
I can't maintain an aura while I'm asleep.
You don't need to sleep here, so it will be fine.
Damien paused to cock his head to the side.
Or maybe it won't, since this is a bit rough for your first time. The thing is, you need to maintain concentration the entire time, and you can get tired, so you might need to set up an alternative option.
An alternative? Like what, another technique?
I mean like getting a room at a hotel. Float higher and pay attention when you look east.
Puzzled, Rick did so, pushing harder off the ground. His legs pushed rather deep into the ground, but then he rebounded high into the air. Once he had some height, he was able to see exactly what Damien meant. For a moment, he just stared. Ahead of them was clearly the demonic mirror of Branton, yet the city was completely different. It was much smaller overall, with only a single unnaturally tall spire in the place of the skyscrapers downtown. There was a large block of normal-looking buildings, but right beside it lay a region of strange and crooked buildings covered in large cobwebs. The entire south side of town was a series of open pits that glowed with blue light. Even from a distance, he could see demons moving about, including what appeared to be mining operations to the south. When he came back down, he glanced over at Damien.
So, this is demonic Branton. Is it like a mirror of us, or...
Nah, they're just here because we're here. Some of the demonic firms have secondary offices on this side, for example. It's more like another neighborhood of Branton. Most human cities have them, unless they've taken steps to prevent it.
So they followed us. Are there any examples where it went the other way? A human city built because of the demon city on the other side?
Damien shot him a strange look that was impossible to read, then began pushing forward faster.
You never stop asking questions, do you? Well, I'm not here to lecture, just to get you set up as quickly as possible. I need to go this way regardless, so it's no issue so far, but we'll head our separate ways soon.
Though Rick wanted to object, suddenly feeling a low level of panic to be left alone here, he didn't think it was wise to push Damien. In fact, he found himself staring after the other man with new eyes. It was one thing to make an accurate accusation as he put all the facts together, and another to consider exactly what it meant. Whoever Damien was, he'd been planning this for a long time and had both resources and skills to back up his efforts. Thanks to the shell around his portfolio, it was difficult to judge his strength, but Rick guessed that he was a middleweight like Emily, since he'd sparred with both of them. The bigger question was what exactly Damien was aiming for. Something to do with the Demon Realm? The Central States Lucrum Authority? The Global Lucrum Authority itself? Distracted by his thoughts, Rick didn't realize that they were getting closer to the outer limits of the city. There were two tall spires that might have been trees with a spiderweb in between them. He realized he was heading toward it and tried to move away just out of instinctive distaste for spiderwebs, but he was already in the air and couldn't change his trajectory. Well, most likely he'd just pass through. Except that he hit the web and stuck there. Rick lashed out automatically and his arm caught on another incredibly sticky strand of web. He calmed down and didn't thrash anymore. Okay, so he was stuck in a giant spider web and Damien was stuck too, cursing irritably. The strands felt extremely sticky and stronger than the rest of the demon realm, but it was probably aura just like the rest. So if he focused... There was a spider the size of a car climbing onto the web toward them.
Oh gosh, I'm so sorry about this,
the spider said.
Here, let me just... Whoops. Okay, just a bit.
All at once, the web disappeared as if it was just an aura construction instead of a solid object. Rick drifted downward, a bit taken aback. The spider skittered down a building wall faster than he floated, so it was waiting for them. Since Damien landed and just brushed imaginary dust off his suit, Rick decided to play it cool as well.
What are you doing spreading such durable webs? Damien asked. If they were a problem for us, I can only imagine what your neighbors think.
It's getting difficult to make ends meet these days.
The spider had partially reared up, its front legs rubbing together with its mandibles in a way that should have been creepy, but looked distinctly nervous.
I never thought, gosh, humans here. I mean, we have a few expats, and there's the very rare visitor, but why are you even here?
Business. Now, if there's nothing else.
Actually, could I get you to make a contract? Even a brief one would be great, or just a little blood. You have no idea how much it would help me. I mean, no idea.
Sighing, Damien glanced in either direction, then stepped closer and lowered his voice.
I'll pay a small amount if you can give me reliable information about the local situation at the moment.
Oh, of course, of course!
The spider scuttled closer and spoke with Damien in a low voice, too quiet for Rick to hear. He advanced closer, not liking the secrets, but didn't want to antagonize Damien unnecessarily. Before too long, their position shifted, and something happened that made Rick freeze. Damien pulled a small black needle from his jacket and used it to prick his finger. A drop of blood welled up, then he extended his hand and let it drop onto the demonic spider. When it touched, the spider seemed to grow brighter and became slightly less insubstantial.
Oh, thank you. Really, this is going to be so good for the little ones.
Just go and don't mention this.
Damien ignored the massive demonic spider and turned to Rick with a look of mild annoyance.
I guess I'll give you my spare in case you need to make any deals. Don't trust any needles you're given here. Not so much that they'd be trying something, but they might be a junkie. Most of their drugs or illnesses won't affect us, but some might if they're based in Lucra more than Aura.
Though Rick accepted the needle, this did not exactly make him feel more comfortable. So you're telling me that all the demons around here want our blood? Are you sure that they won't try to just take more than a drop?
Oh, calm down. You're probably fine. We don't quite exist in the same way here, so most couldn't really harm you. Same as the reason demons can't just invade our world.
So a drop of blood is payment for things here? How much? What about the contract it mentioned?
We're not staying, so don't sign any contracts. And one drop should be fine for most anything.
Damien smoothed down the collar of his suit jacket and sighed.
I think now you have everything you need to figure the rest out yourself. I'm going to go find out how long it will take them to send someone after us. I'll let you know about all of that, but otherwise, you're on your own.
No, wait! Rick drifted to the side to intercept Damien before he could go. We need to be precise about what exactly our agreement is.
I've already helped you a lot, and I'll make sure you get out when they come rescue us. That's more than enough.
No, it's not. I'm fine working with you, given the circumstances, but I'm not willing to leave it with so little information. We need to get our story straight for one. Damien sighed, but turned to face him fully.
That's right, but we can do that closer to the time. I told you they'll be too worried about causing another rupture to force anything through right away.
But I want more information. Rick refused to let himself back down, even as Damien stared at him. Once we get out, we need to have a conversation about what exactly is going on.
Oh, that was already going to happen. You clearly don't know how to leave things alone, so I figured I'd have to deal with you directly.
It would have been a threat, but Damien spoke with a lazy grin.
This is actually the second time you've helped take attention off me. My movements look way less suspicious since I could conceivably have been trying to help you. After this is over, I'll give you a few answers, then compensate you for fucking off.
Rick folded his arms. We'll talk about the details at that time.
All right, fine. Have fun until then.
With that, Damien pushed hard off the ground, his aura flaring in a new way. His aura slashed over the city until it was lost in the pale sky. In his absence, the mists seemed to flow more heavily. Rick took a deep breath and realized that he was alone in the demonic city. Chapter 32. Familiar Hierarchies. For what felt like hours, Rick just drifted through demonic Branton, letting his mind catch up to everything that had happened. He felt like being violently thrown into the demon realm should have been a chaotic experience, yet instead he found it deeply isolating. The threats weren't violent attacks, but the slow drain of his energy and the fact that he was missing events that mattered to him back in the normal world. Trying not to think about that, Rick instead focused on analyzing his environment. Though it seemed strange at first, this part of Branton was really a normal city in the end. A few smaller demons moved along in alleys and gutters, apparently treated like animals. He saw one of the larger demons kick a smaller one out of the way, and it just whimpered and limped away, like a stray dog. Now that he was in the central part of the city, most of the demons he saw were larger and seemed to have some intelligence.
There were a fair number of demonic frogs. They were larger than most of the animal-like ones and seemed to carry money. Also a decent number of oversized demonic ants that he often saw waiting at protrusions that seemed to serve as bus stops, waiting to jump onto large demonic caterpillars that moved around tracks as public transportation. He wasn't sure if the caterpillars were just animals or another type of demon. Unquestionably on top were the humanoid demons, though they didn't look quite so human as those he'd seen before. Most wore clothes, though they were actually colored opaque mists that flowed around them. It seemed clear that this was their real appearance, not the suits they wore to human meetings. When he passed near the humanoid ones, they looked at him in mild surprise, but went about their business. Since they all seemed to have their own lives and he was invisible to many, Rick found himself essentially ignored. Could he really just stay here doing nothing for however long it took them to be rescued? That would be boring, but it would also be a grueling endurance marathon. His biking had accustomed him to maintaining aura for long periods of time, and allegedly he wouldn't get sleepy here. Yet, generated aura here drained into the air instead of being drawn back into his body. Instead of recycling his power, he was slowly bleeding away Lucrum. Fortunately, he had arrived at full power, since he hadn't known what he'd face, but now that money was circling the drain.
"Hey there, cutie."
The voice beside him made him jump, and he turned to find a succubus floating in the air beside him. She wore only a few wisps of smoke. The mist clothes fully covered other demons, but not her.
"Word has it that you got trapped on our side. They'll probably be a while rescuing you,
He tried not to look at her and kept walking, but she floated along beside him, so he felt he had to answer. "There were multiple powerful people there when I went through. I'm sure they'll be here soon."
Maybe so, but these things can take time. I know this place can be uncomfortable for humans, but it doesn't have to be that way. Understand?"
She tried to wrap herself around his arm, but her body felt more like a misty breeze than flesh.
"If you'll sign a little contract, or even just give a bit of blood, I could make your stay very comfortable."
"I have a girlfriend."
Rick pulled away and felt stupid. He was trapped in the demon realm and being propositioned for his soul or his blood, and that was his excuse? It was true, though. What would Emily do when she found out? Or would she even know? Unless the CSLA made an announcement, they might cover it up. Emily might be offended if he apparently ignored her texts for too long. No, she'd probably call and Melissa would tell her. God, Melissa would be waiting for him at home.
"Wow, you obviously have a lot of tension."
The succubus floated in closer, not touching him.
"Are you sure your girlfriend would mind? Why would she even need to find out?"
"Not interested."
"Oh, come on. Fine, turn me down, but at least let me make some deal. I could give you a safe place to stay and, I don't know, a massage. I'm told I'm really good at that, and I won't make it weird."
Though Rick tried to pull away from her, pushing himself into the air didn't work when the succubus floated as easily as he did. Deciding that he didn't have a choice, Rick turned back to her. "Why are you so insistent about this? You're a succubus. Can't you go tempt someone else?"
"You just saw how big of a pain it is to pass between realms. You think we just pop over into your world whenever we want? I mean, I wish I was rich enough for that, but fat chance."
"Is human blood really that valuable?" She stared at him for a bit, then dropped the seductive look and pouted.
"It's valuable, but it's more that we're really desperate here in Branton. Our population is growing too fast, and it's hard to get by. I'm lucky that I grew up a few decades ago, but things have gotten even worse since then. All kinds of nonsense about our movement rights, and something's wrong with Lucrum flow, and the big firms just keep getting more powerful."
Despite himself, Rick glanced over at her with new eyes.
"Huh, that's not so different from our world. What exactly is going on?"
"Haven't the faintest idea. You think they tell me about big important stuff? But I'm trying to answer your questions. Isn't that worth a bit of blood? Just a teensy bit?"
"Are times that rough? Can't demons, get jobs?"
"Oh, boo, you sound like my mother."
The succubus rolled her eyes.
Obviously, the best thing is if you can get a connection to a demonic bond, but they have like a million candidates, and so they're basically just looking for reasons to ignore you. It's like entry-level positions require you to have made 3 bonds or tempted 5 humans or whatever. How are you supposed to have that much experience for entry-level positions?
Huh. Rick had really not expected his time in the demon world to turn in that direction, but apparently some things were universal. Or, since he was in a different realm, was he even in the same universe? In any case, the succubus eventually drifted away irritably when she figured out that she wasn't going to get anything from him. Rick kept wandering, trying to figure out what the shops on the sides of the streets were. Unlike the human world, there didn't seem to be any writing anywhere. Did the demons just know what things were by sight? Though Damien had suggested that he could find a hotel, Rick wasn't anywhere near tired. And despite the conversations so far, he actually felt less oriented than before. If he had been thrown into a hellscape where he had to fight for his life, he knew how to handle that. This was like being thrown into a foreign city with no way home. Rick wasn't sure how long he wandered through the city, but he had a bad feeling that it was over an entire day given how much area he covered. Damien had said it would take them a while to get through without causing another rupture, but how long was that? He'd assumed hours at first, but could he have actually meant days? For almost a day, Rick was miserable as he realized that he must be missing Melissa's CLAT. She might feel abandoned, or even if she knew what had happened to him, she would be sick with worry. He didn't think that she would skip the exam over this, or at least he hoped not, but the inability to know angered him, and he wanted to rage, but there was no way to vent his anger. Several demons tried to offer him food or other services in exchange for blood, but he refused them. They were actually trying to comfort him, he thought, but he wasn't in the mood to be comforted. One offered him a path back to the human realm, and Rick almost jumped at it, yet his bullshit radar made him hesitate. No, that offer was too good to be true. For a while, he worried that Damien had lied and simply left him in the demon realm. Yet, after conversing with some suit-clad demons, he learned that there had been no travel recently, even along the corporate demonic channels. That was all the information he could get without spending some of his blood, so he decided that was enough. They were apparently stuck here. Annoyed by all of the offers from higher demons, Rick found himself pushed out of the central city. In the wilderness, there were far more of the animal-like demons, and though they usually couldn't see him due to his aura, he couldn't suppress a fear of him collapsing due to exhaustion and all of them swarming over his body. That left him wandering along the edges. Rick eventually spent some time perched on high rocks near the open pit portion of the city, watching the work. They appeared to be mining the blue glowing rocks. He wasn't sure what the rocks were, not lucrum, but they obviously had some value. Mining them was one of the few jobs with lots of positions available, but it was brutal work. Only the lower-ranked demons seemed to take it, wriggling through small crevices. They worked long hours and sometimes just crawled out to collapse exhausted by the sides of the pits. Though few looked even vaguely human, he still knew overworked employees when he saw them. One part of the mine collapsed, and it seemed that some of the demons died. Some came to mourn them, and Rick found himself awkwardly floating nearby as an unwitting observer. These demons were weak enough that they couldn't notice him through his aura, but strong enough to speak, and apparently to feel a sense of loss. A succubus, who was conservatively dressed for once, noticed him and shot an angry glance his way. Well, it probably wasn't appropriate for him to simply watch their funeral. Nothing changed, and there were no consequences. It seemed that familiar story was told in the demon realm just like the human realm. Rick started to view the highest level demons in the spire just like the elite humans. Maybe the problem wasn't actually demons, but their organizations that tried to seduce humans into demonic bonds. All the demons seemed to want them, but given their poverty, he couldn't blame them for jumping at the chance and not thinking too much about how humans might be harmed. It was just business, after all. Eventually, one day he found himself sitting on the edge of the pits, watching the workers while he struggled to maintain his aura. It was definitely getting more difficult, an aura workout like he'd never felt before. He was considering letting it drop for a while in a central part of the city to see if taking a break there would be safe, and let him recuperate. Below, he spotted two demons who seemed to be fighting. They both looked like melted frogs, their mouths running to the side and opening in a strange way that released mucus every time they spoke. Hideous, but in his time there, he'd grown used to it. No, they weren't fighting. One of the demons was larger than the other and clearly supporting the smaller one. It took most of the burden of the rocks they carried, yet the smaller one was still struggling more. Frequently, it needed to be propped up or encouraged onward. Rick floated closer out of curiosity.
"Just a little farther," the larger demon said. "We almost have our quota for the day." "I can't."
The smaller one shuddered and coughed up mucus of a different color.
"It's too much. They don't pay us enough. I get weaker each day." "Don't worry. Things will get better. If we keep it up, we might get promoted, remember? Then we could move into a better place. Maybe even move out of here. We could visit the human realm, you know. Can you imagine it? Matter flowing everywhere. We could eat like kings."
The larger demon kept up the encouraging talk, occasionally patting the smaller one on the back with a flipper-like hand. It seemed to work for a while, but the smaller demon just wasn't large enough to carry such heavy loads. Rick stared at them, wondering just what they were to one another. Siblings? Lovers? Some demonic relationship he couldn't understand? Despite the fact that they were demons, and disgusting blobs at that, he found himself ignoring all those details. It hurt to see the larger one force itself to keep up the encouragement when it was obviously struggling too. Then, abruptly, the smaller demon fell, its rocks falling and tumbling back down the slope. It collapsed and coughed up a larger amount of that unusual fluid. Rick actually reached out to try to stop the rocks, but they passed through his hand. They tugged a bit on his body, but he couldn't connect with them.
"No, no, don't fall."
The larger demon slithered around the smaller one, dismay evident in its voice.
"Please, get up. Just a little further, okay? I'll carry everything. Just get up."
That was the moment when it was finally too much. His hands trembling, Rick reached into his pocket and pulled out the black needle he'd been ignoring since the first day in the demon realm. He pricked his finger and was surprised at how easily it penetrated his skin. A single sharp pain, then blood was welling up in the injury. Taking a deep breath, Rick held his finger over the smaller demon and let the drop fall. The energy of his blood immediately pulsed through, and the demon opened one distorted eye again. The eye actually turned and saw him for the first time. Rick wasn't sure if his control had faltered or if he had just forced their attention, but now both demons turned to stare at him in shock. Rick sighed. If he was going to be trapped here for so long... Chapter 33. Moments with Melissa. Melissa let out a moan of pure satisfaction as the glorious hands kept working over her back. Those fingers were freaking magic. All of the stress from... all of her stress just melted away. Plus, she'd had a kink in her lower back ever since the CLAT, and the massage finally took care of it. The first time Lisa had given her a massage, it had actually been a bit awkward, since Melissa wasn't comfortable around very many people. With one obvious exception she tried not to think about, there wasn't a lot of positive physical affection in their family. She couldn't deny how much it helped, though, and she'd come to enjoy it as well. When Melissa relaxed, Lisa seemed to relax as well and did a better job, or maybe she just knew her better.
"You really sound like you needed this today," Lisa said. "Looks like you didn't bruise during the trials, though."
"Yeah, I got off fairly easy."
Melissa yawned and stretched.
"I think I almost pulled something in one leg, but otherwise I'm just tired."
"So, you think you did well on your CLAT?"
"I really hope so. That thing was a heck of a lot of trouble."
It was easier to speak lightly about it than to think about how it had happened and the fact that there had been no one to greet her after it was done.
"I left two questions blank on the written portion since I didn't want to get penalized too much, but that means I couldn't get a perfect score there. And I wasn't able to make the watermark thing float all the way to the top."
"Oh, don't worry about that."
Lisa leaned in closer and gave her a reassuring pat on the back before returning to her usual massage.
The CLAT isn't about maxing the scores in every category. It's proving competence across the board while you're still young that matters. That's what I tell myself, but I did better in some of my practices. I stayed focused for part of it, but I really had trouble concentrating.
They lapsed into silence for a while, not as comfortable as usual. Before it could get awkward, Lisa spoke up again.
Hey, do they still make you do that meditation thing where you have plates stacked on your lap and head? It's been ages since I took the CLAT, and I haven't really checked. Yeah, we had to do that. Why?
Well, it might be good discipline on its own, but unlike the other tests, it's not positively correlated with performance by other metrics. The CLAT is overall a well-designed test, but it's like they stuck in a relic from a previous era because it was tradition.
You mean I spent all that time practicing it for nothing? Oh man, what a ripoff!
They finished not long after, and Lisa went to wash her hands while Melissa quickly got her shirt back on properly. Her muscles felt all warm and gooey, but now there wasn't much to distract her. She had needed this, yes, but she needed more than that. Unfortunately, there was nothing she could do.
Hey, Lisa, are you doing anything after this?
Not particularly.
The other woman turned and gave her a smile.
Why, do you have a suggestion? Well, that sounds way more formal, like I've planned something. I was just wondering how your work is going with the mixtures. I really appreciate getting them, don't get me wrong, so I just feel like I should be more involved. Is it going well?
Mostly. Everyone says you lose money the first several years after starting a business before making a profit. I'm in that period. Of course, you lose money the first several years before you quit, too, so that might not mean anything.
Oh, I think your stuff is great.
Thanks, but I'm going up against the products of multinational corporations. It's hard to establish myself as reputable.
Lisa leaned back against a wall and stared upward with a sigh.
The only advantage I really have is that my work is customized to the individual, but I need more of an edge there. I'm not actually qualified to provide all the services a good customized Lucrum trainer should.
Melissa hadn't really thought too hard about Lisa's work, but now she was curious.
Like what? Don't you just need the knowledge of mixing the right things together?
That's the start, but sometimes you need expensive equipment or advanced techniques. One of my richer clients actually gave me several expensive ingredients to blend. I've gotten him convinced, and I had to pay to have someone else do it properly. That keeps me in business, but I lose money on it.
But if I know you, you're working to change that, right?
I'm trying,
Lisa shrugged with a weak smile.
I've been going to a few conferences and seminars about ether creation. It's a specialized niche, but it blends very well with my work. If I could gain proper qualifications there, I could create much more advanced mixtures.
Ooh, really?
Melissa moved in and grabbed the other woman's wrists.
Show me. Aura generation is just normal, but making ether, I don't know, that's like magic.
Well, I suppose I can. Come this way.
They stepped from Lisa's massage room, which was really just an extra bedroom with a table, and into her kitchen. She pulled out a glass jar, sprayed it with antiseptic, sterilized it with aura, then set to work. Lisa raised her hand, palm up, and closed her fingers just slightly. Melissa watched her, feeling a bit stupid to be staring at a hand. Creating ether wasn't like creating aura, and even though both came from Lucrum, she wasn't sure on the details. It would look the same to her whether Lisa was doing a super genius job or just pretending. Gradually, however, the light above her hand began to increase. Lisa grimaced and clenched her fingers just a little more, then for the first time Melissa saw something unusual. A golden bubble floating above her hand. Not aura or a container for Lucrum, but Lucrum converted into raw matter as ether. Slowly the bubble swelled and thickened, then began to fill with a golden liquid. It spun around inside the bubble, gradually growing. As it grew, Lisa's fingers tightened until her knuckles were white and it looked like she was trying to tear something out of the air itself. Just as the bubble was nearly full, Lisa let out a gasp and quickly turned her hand over. The bubble moved with her hand, then fell, splattering into the jar. Lisa quickly placed a lid on top and screwed it closed, frowning at the liquid covering the bottom of the jar. Since she looked a bit self-conscious, Melissa clapped rapidly for her.
Ooh, I've never seen someone actually make ether before. It's pretty, like honey, but I'm guessing I shouldn't drink it.
No, definitely not at this stage.
Lisa smiled briefly, then went back to frowning at the liquid.
The thing is, it's not actually supposed to be this dark and viscous. Ideally, it should be less like honey and more like, I don't know, colored water?
Are you telling me that ether should basically look like a sports drink? Does it have electrolytes?
Huh, I suppose that's one way you could describe it. Once, that would have gotten ether creators all upset, but there are actual sports drink manufacturers doing really good work now, so I suppose it's not an insult anymore.
But I'm not sure I get it.
Melissa peered at the liquid closer.
I completely understand how you could include this in a mixture or philosopher's elixir or something to make it better. How do you make solid objects like ether-enchanted doors and things? Can you solidify it somehow?
No. If you want to create solid ether, you have to create it in that state. But I'm just getting started, and liquid is the easiest state for ether.
Lisa paused and gave a half shrug.
Well, gas is actually easier, but considering that it just dissipates, there's not a lot of use for ether gas.
Couldn't you create, I don't know, ether helium balloons?
Huh, I don't think that would be a good idea. But anyway, I need to master at least the first steps of this, or my expertise won't be much better than work my clients could put together themselves. The problem with having skilled clients is that they can do a lot of things on their own.
They were beginning to move from the kitchen to the door, but Melissa didn't want it to be over so soon.
Is there any way I can help? You know about my condition. Could a void flame be converted into ether somehow? Or at least something that could give your mixture some more oomph?
I'm not sure.
Lisa stopped and gave her a thoughtful look.
You definitely couldn't turn your void flame into ether, because ether is fundamentally lucrum, and your void is a lack of lucrum. But the flame would have an impact on many substances, possibly altering them. The question is if it would ever have a positive impact.
It's possible it might. When I was training with... I've been able to use the void flame to burn away inefficient lucrum and help improve foundations.
Lisa reached out and rubbed her shoulder.
That's kind of you, Melissa, and an interesting idea, but I think at my current level of knowledge, I should absolutely not attempt anything like that. It's always possible you could be harmed in some way, and probably fairly likely that I'd hurt myself or a client.
Oh, well, I figured it was worth a shot.
Melissa, are you doing okay? You seem cheerful, but it seems, well, I don't want to make assumptions about you.
I'm doing fine.
She smiled, but it took too much effort. Lisa saw right through it.
If you say so, but I'm here if you need anything.
I just, they haven't even explained everything. I just know he's...
Melissa let out a sob and felt horribly weak, but now the words were tumbling out beyond her control.
I tried to meet with them and they weren't even there. They won't even meet with me to explain anything. I just know he's gone, and I have a bunch of hollow promises, and there's not a thing I can do.
She cut off in tears, and Lisa immediately embraced her. Melissa took a ragged breath and tried to get herself under control, but the tears just kept coming. Eventually, she gave up and leaned into the other woman. It was nothing like hugging her brother, but Lisa held her gently and stroked her back with those familiar hands. Bit by bit, Melissa recovered, or maybe she just cried out everything she had.
I'm sorry about that. I just... Hush.
Lisa pulled her back in, squeezing tight for a moment.
You don't need to apologize. It's okay. I can't promise you that everything will turn out all right, but your brother is strong, and he loves you more than anything. If there's even a 1% possibility that he'll come back to you, he'll do it.
Strangely, those words actually got through to Melissa. She had suspicions about how Lisa felt, and Rick had been a sore topic of conversation recently, but none of that mattered now. Whatever else she was, Lisa was a good person. Melissa squeezed her back before pulling away. Though she thanked Lisa for everything, she floated her way back in a daze. The moment of relief had allowed her to release so much pent-up stress, yet it also prevented her from denying the truth. Her brother was still gone, and the company refused to say when they could bring him back. She didn't even fear that he was dead, she just hated the uncertainty and missed him so much. When she got back home, barely remembering the trip, she found herself wandering into her room. Her fingers gently slid over the goofy stuffed jackalope, the marble figurines he'd helped her piece back together, and the old plush dragon. He'd bought that dragon when they were children with lucrum chips he'd scraped together. Rick hadn't mentioned it in years, and she wondered if he even remembered it. Maybe to him it wasn't anything special, because helping her was just what he did. Yet, now that he was missing, there was absolutely nothing she could do to help him. Melissa stared at the objects for a long time, then closed her eyes. Next time, she told herself, it wouldn't be like this. Next time, she wouldn't be helpless. Chapter 34. Demonic Extraction. Rick perched on the edge of one of the webs, watching the workers move below. Everything was going well, and it wasn't likely that he'd need to intervene. He just found it a good way to help him concentrate. After so long in the demon realm, he honestly wasn't sure how long, he was beginning to wonder how long he could last. The constant strain of maintaining his aura was getting deep into his bones. He'd taken several breaks, one of them quite long, and he still felt exhausted when he went back to it. Though it might be true that he didn't need to sleep, sometimes it felt more like he couldn't sleep. Some element of the human world that he needed to rest and restore himself just didn't exist here. Though by now he knew he wasn't in serious danger, if his aura dropped, he would definitely be heavily inconvenienced. Once word had gotten out about what he had done, demons who could find him had come for him. There had even been a serious attack, which he had only warded off by intensifying his aura in an improvised technique that was a mix of what Damien had done before and Emily's blade. Most of the demons who wanted his attention, however, were simply poor and desperate. Rick felt for them, but he couldn't help every single demon who asked for it. In addition to his own limited strength, there were opportunists and junkies who would waste his blood. He suspected those were among the minority. So far, he had a positive impression of the lesser demons who worked in the mines. They were mostly just folks who wanted to get by. Some might have vices or not work the hardest, but that was because the system was stacked against them. Even hard-working demons like Buftgage and Yissel couldn't get ahead. At that very moment, Buftgage hopped over the ridge, carrying Yissel on his head. Rick wasn't actually sure if the demons had any gender, but their voices sounded male and they called each other brothers. Yissel was much larger and healthier looking than before, but since Buftgage had been fed as well, he was still large enough to carry his brother.
"Well done for the day,"
Yissel said proudly, hopping up and down on his brother's head. Buftgage made a shifting motion that Rick had come to decide meant agreement.
"If we work hard, we should finish our quota in just 2 cycles, and with our whole crew working more efficiently, we could be up for a promotion. This is thanks to you."
Yissel spat up a bunch of mucus, but it was the proper color, meaning excitement instead of illness. "No, this is your work," Rick said. He meant it, too. Given his inability to touch the world around him, he really hadn't had much to do with it. Essentially, all he had done was fund the brothers and their allies via free blood. Technically, they defended him when he rested, so they didn't feel like he pitied them, but it was clearly an advantage they'd never have found normally. Beyond that, it was mostly their work with a few suggestions from him. With their new strength, they'd managed their quotas and had time to redesign the work shifts. A few ideas had improved safety and made their crew a more desirable position, allowing them to get better workers. It all struck Rick as fairly obvious improvements. They'd just been ignored because they didn't improve the bottom line of whoever owned the mines. Demon lives were cheap.
"If we get extra money,"
Buftgage said happily,
"we should eat with the spiders. They always have the best food." "Oh, yes,"
Yithsil trembled in glee, then abruptly turned to Rick with a guilty look. At least that was Rick's best guess at interpreting their emotions.
"It's not as good as your blood, though." "Oh, definitely,"
Buftgage nodded urgently, nearly dislodging his brother.
"It's just that we ate there long ago and were so nostalgic for it." "Yes, it was so good."
Most of the time, Rick just focused on what was before him. But in moments like that, it was difficult to reconcile the harmless brothers with the ruthless demons who created demonic bonds in the human realm. Rick leaned a bit closer and eyed the two of them. "If you two had all the money in the world, what would you do?"
"Sit and do nothing,"
Yithsil answered so aggressively that he tumbled off his brother's head before righting himself. The older demon, however, considered the question thoughtfully before answering.
I think I'd want better work. Something where I wouldn't see the same rocks every day. I'd like to see the world in our realm, and maybe even yours.
Never mind, me too. We can sit and do nothing in exotic places.
Not exactly what he'd wanted, so Rick pressed further. Would that mean joining one of the corporations and creating a human bond? That could let you see the world if it all went well. To his surprise, Biftgage spat up mucus in disgust.
As if we'd have a chance.
What do you mean? I have friends who got demonic bonds with demons that didn't look any bigger or stronger than you. Those bonds had destroyed them, but that wasn't the point. Rick felt a bit guilty for leading the brothers on like this, though he was starting to suspect there was something else in play.
Maybe in the old days, but it's not like that anymore. And I don't just mean with the big blockage that got you stuck here. There just aren't any bond jobs like there used to be, not for demons like us.
Rick shifted around and bent down to face them fully. Explain more. I haven't heard anything about this.
Really?
Yissel peered at him in surprise.
I figured all the humans must have seen the new super lucrum things. It's advanced lucrum,
Buftgage said. The words sent a shiver through Rick's body, and he understood even before the demon finished explaining.
Lots of poor humans used to get little demonic bonds, so there was work for demons like us. But whatever this advanced lucrum business is, it helps poor humans get by and makes them poorer. So they're even riskier for the corporations, and a lot of the bigger demons are phasing out the smaller human bonds. From what I hear, they sound really worried that it will unbalance our whole economy.
You never said that,
Yithsel rounded on his brother in surprise.
Were you keeping secrets?
I just didn't want to worry you, brother. Life is hard enough without worrying about the problems of the biggest demons.
As they spoke, Rick just sat there and thought about it. He hadn't considered